Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. We have a great deal to talk about this hour. We're going to start our conversation off with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, and we're going to look at the press from around the world. And in the next hour, we're going to talk about our food. A very interesting hour and illuminating as well. Before we get into that, I want to remind you that support for WEAA's traffic is provided by Home Depot, offering plant care guides at HomeDepotGardenClub.com.
Crash taking up the shoulder outer loop at Lock Raven Boulevard. The update brought to you by Caltrate. Inner loop, Wilkins Avenue to 70, volume builds but no delays yet. Just some on and off slowing inner loop, Charles Street to Lock Raven Boulevard. No problems reported right now along 95 northbound. At the Fort McHenry Tunnel, also moving well between the 895 merge and the Beltway. Paring Parkway at Belvedere Avenue. Accident there. Also reported at Hillen Road and Paring Parkway, so just use some extra caution there. Center at Calvert, Garrison Boulevard at Clifton Avenue. Your other Baltimore City crashes. Caltrate, get a little TLC every day. Tender, loving Caltrate. Caltrate has essential daily calcium plus advanced levels of vitamin D to help you absorb that TLC. I'm Joanna Campbell with Baltimore Area Traffic.
Hi, I'm Deborah Owens. Join me and my co-host, ABC2 News anchor Terry Owens, at another Wealthy Lifestyle Live event Tuesday, April 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Holiday Inn Inner Harbor. Author Marlena Giroux will share how you can repair, clean up, and raise your credit scores. That's Wealthy Lifestyle Live at the Holiday Inn Inner Harbor, sponsored by WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
I'm going to remind you all again, as you just heard my colleague Deborah Owens on the air, going down to the Harbor Holiday Inn in the Inner Harbor. Be a live broadcast at 7 p.m. My colleague Baseman is on his way down there now, and Deborah will be discussing how to repair your credit with her special guest, Marlena Giroux, who wrote the book, It Has to Make Sense. So head on down and listen to our conversation here right now with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. And Lieutenant Governor, welcome. Good to have you with us. 410-319-8888, and you can join us here for this conversation as we talk with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. Let's try that again. You there?
Yeah, Mark.
Oh,
I'm here.
Now
right here in the
you.
Studio, right next to you.
I thought maybe we'd try to censor you off the air. 410-319-8888. Lieutenant Governor Brown, of course, has been in that position since 2006. He served two terms in the Maryland House of Delegates representing Prince George's County. He's a 25-year veteran of the United States Army. He's currently a colonel as well in the U.S. Army Reserve, and spent his year in Iraq in the AG's Corps, and had to leave the House to do that for a year, and came back to become Lieutenant Governor.
And here I am. I'm back.
You're back. Now, you're still in the Reserve, though, now, right?
I'm still in the Reserves, Mark. I'm a drilling reservist. I have the honor, the privilege to lead a group of Army lawyers and paralegals with the 153rd Legal Support Organization. We support soldiers who are deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan by writing wills and powers of attorney.
When
they come back, helping them, secure their employment, reemployment rights, and those kinds of things. So it's legal assistance, basic legal assistance. But what we believe strongly that when you can support soldiers who are deploying and in a way that they don't have to worry about what's going on back home because their families are being taken care of, their personal and financial and legal matters are in order, they can focus on what they need to focus on in Iraq and Afghanistan, which will ensure will enhance the likelihood that they'll come home to us because they're focused on their mission.
In many ways, you always struck me as a guy who's – you are Army through and through.
Yeah, I'm Army. I've said over and over again, I think the Army is probably shaped – who I am as a person more than any other thing, anything else I've been involved in. So I certainly have appreciated the 25 years. I think you may have added one. I think it's 20. I know, 25 this year.
25
right.
years, yeah. 25. I know I was right. 25 this year. So does that mean, as before we get into the heart of the issues you've been working with, especially domestic violence, which has been something you've been fighting to deal with in the state legislature this session, and we really want to spend our time talking about that. But so juggling this role, though, as colonel in the reserve, you still go to meetings? And
yeah,
you still
I drill one weekend a month still, 2 weeks a year. As you mentioned, I deployed to Iraq in 2004 as a reservist, so I was activated for about a year with the Civil Affairs Unit out of New York. I was the judge advocate for a general officer, and I also worked a lot with the State Department when we were assisting the Iraqi government to stand up a lot of its ministries. I was with the Ministry of Displacement and Migration, and their responsibility was to work with the refugee population within Iraq to connect them to services and assistance. So it was frustrating work because at that time, and you know, more so then than today, I mean, the level of violence fortunately has tapered off, although it's still there, and it makes it very difficult to establish a government and civil institutions. But that's what we were working on.
Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown's in the studio, 410-319-8888. You can join us here for a conversation with the governor. And we are, you refer to Lieutenant Governor as governor, so you hear me do that. That's why I'm doing that. I didn't promote him to governor myself. You can join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Now, one of the things that you were charged with, or you charged yourself with, in this last session was the domestic violence bill and strengthening the laws around domestic violence, but you also experienced a tragedy in your own family in domestic violence.
Sure, Mark. First of all, too many families in Maryland, in every community, regardless of race and ethnicity and culture and faith, domestic violence is pervasive in our community. That's true in Maryland. It's true across the country. The number of reported cases of domestic violence has been on the rise for several years now. And my family, unfortunately, was the experienced domestic violence and the tragedy of domestic violence when my cousin Kathy was killed in August of 2008, last year in Montgomery County by her estranged boyfriend. So he shot and killed her at 10:30 at night. She never saw it coming. And so as a result of that, I have recommitted myself to this most important issue. The governor was already two steps ahead of me, and soon after that unfortunate tragedy in my for my family, the governor and I spoke, and he said, listen, why don't we make domestic violence one of our priority issues for this legislative session? So we said, okay, let's sit down with the advocates, the folks who have been working on these issues for years, and say, well, how can we make a difference this year to improve public safety in Maryland by addressing the harms of domestic violence? And the advocate said, well, we need to take guns out of the hands of domestic abusers, because we know in Maryland last year, 75 people were killed in domestic violence-related homicides. More than half of them involved guns. So we know who the abusers are. We know who the victims are. More often than not, we know when the gun is involved. So if you can take that gun out of the equation, you're going to go a long way in saving lives. And this bill that we introduced and worked with the General Assembly on had been introduced in years past unsuccessfully. So we built on that hard work in years past, and this year we're very pleased to say that as of, I think it was either earlier today or yesterday, the Senate passed the same version that the House did. So it is now going to go to the governor's desk, and judges will have the tools to order domestic abusers to surrender their firearms in Maryland.
So I wonder what you, if you contemplate this. I mean, what do you think is going on here in this culture of ours? I mean, you said earlier incorrectly that domestic violence against women, and it's mostly against women. I guess a minority of cases, it's women against men, but the most part we're talking about men's violence against women in this world. Crosses class lines, crosses race lines. It happens in the wealthiest homes, happens in the poorest homes. So I mean, beyond the laws, beyond saying, okay, we're going to take guns out of the hands of men who have protective orders placed against them to stay away from the women in their lives, what do we do about that, and why do you think it's so pervasive? I know, well, let's start there. I mean, it does seem to be pervasive in terms of this kind of violence. And my fiance said to me a few weeks ago, she knows too many women whose stories are not public. She thinks the majority of women have experienced at some point in their lives physical or sexual violence against them, whether it's a child or as an adult. What is going on with us?
Sure.
Men. That this takes place
sure,
the way
from,
it takes place.
From what I hear, and, you know, I recently visited the House of Ruth. I recently visited the Family Crisis Center in Prince George's County. I've had an opportunity to speak to many survivors of domestic violence, family members of victims of domestic violence. It is a control issue. You're right, Mark, that it's mostly men who are domestic abusers who are obsessed and possessed with the need to control another person, in this case, a woman. And what we also know is that it's intergenerational. Often a domestic abuser grew up in a household where they experienced domestic violence or unhealthy control and manipulation between two people. So the gun bills that we introduced and that are passed, I mean, that's just a small step in the right direction. What the larger need there, the greater need, is being able to work with victims and family members in domestic violence situations to break that cycle of domestic violence. So you do that by educating the public that domestic violence is occurring, the signs and symptoms of domestic violence, and providing the services, whether it's transitional housing, whether it's food, whether it's connecting victims to employment services, counseling services, substance abuse services, anything that we can do to draw that victim out of that situation and into the refuge, the sanctuary of either a shelter or friends and family where it's a safe environment. We need to do more in that area. We need to ensure that we're providing the services to support victims and families so we can break this cycle, have the victims step out. They're often accompanied with children. And if we can break that cycle, then over the course of years, it's my hope and certainly the governor's hope that we'll see domestic violence drop in Maryland.
We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, who joins us in the studio for the first part of our 5 o'clock hour. You can join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. One of those big causes in the House this year is domestic violence, the bill to take guns out of the hands of those who have protective orders against them from going to the homes of the people they've abused. Your thoughts on that and more, whatever you want to talk about, Lieutenant Governor, 410-319-8888. The call's coming in now. We're going to come right to them as soon as I'm told who you are, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I know that Delegate Jill Carter was working to get something included in bills around violence and abuse with teenagers that she says is out of control in our public high schools and maybe in private high schools as well, not just public schools, of physical and sexual abuse against young women by young men in high schools that just goes underreported, not talked about. I don't know how far that bill got or her work got in the House of Delegates.
Sure. I have had many discussions with advocates that say that there's an increasing number of reported incidences of violence at the teenage level. It's happening in the schools. It's happening in the neighborhoods. And I know that in some school systems, there is an effort to introduce into the curriculum awareness programs that to educate and our young people, men, boys and girls, about this for the victims, you know, what they can do to leave that situation, to seek help, that it's okay, that relationships that include physical violence or abuse, mental or emotional, those are the wrong relationships to be in. And this is what you can do and consider and ought to do to break it. For our young men, educating them, teaching them that's unacceptable behavior. And again, it's that effort to break that cycle, to start at a young age. So that is some of that is happening in our local school systems. I don't believe it's a statewide standard, and I'm sure that it'll be getting a closer look the years to come.
Let me open the phones here and see what our listeners are thinking. We're talking with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. He deals with many issues that face our state government as the partner to Governor Martin O'Malley. He's been in office since 2006. He was in the House of Delegates for 2 years. He's a 25-year veteran of the U.S. Army, a colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve, served a year in Iraq in 2004 when he was a member of the House of Delegates, and joins us for this part of our 5 o'clock hour, 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. And Russ in East Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Russ, you're on the, you're there.
Greetings, Mark. How are you today?
Well, good to hear from you.
Mark, I want to say hi to the Lieutenant Governor, too, but I want to get in a personal mode today and solicit the Lieutenant Governor's help in getting information on commuter tickets for the toll tunnels.
Okay.
I run a van service, and we use that or the roads quite a bit, so it's going to really hurt us to go from paying, say, 40 cents a ticket to $2. And we don't use credit cards because they're too expensive. You're paying the extra 18% plus. And, you know, from van to van, if your van's in an accident and you go one way and the van goes the other, you, by the time you marry back up with it, you could be paying a substantial amount of somebody else's problems. So it's really important to us, and I'm wondering if you could just speak to the Transportation Secretary and maybe bring it to the attention of the governor that we guys out here need your help on this.
Sure, Russ. Thanks for the raising the issue. The larger issue is the state's ability to invest in the transportation infrastructure, roads, bridges, and mass transit. Since 2007, when the governor and I came into office, we've had to reduce by nearly $2 billion the Transportation Trust Fund. When I say reduce, I mean that the revenues going into the Transportation Trust Fund, which are generated by licensing fees, registration, titling, not licensing, I'm sorry, registration, titling, and also the gas tax. Those revenues have not been coming in at the same levels that we've seen historically because, as we know, because of the economy, highway miles are down. People aren't driving as much. They're not, you know, new car sales are down. So as a result, there's less money in the system, in the Transportation Trust Fund to maintain our roads, to improve our roads, to build our roads where necessary, and to do the same in the area of mass transit. So I know that the Maryland Transportation Authority is looking at all revenue sources to, you know, figure out how do we pay for this infrastructure to maintain it and to, where necessary, to expand the infrastructure. And we're looking for ways to do it in a way that's, you know, it's equitable. So I can't – the governor's aware of the issue. The Secretary Picari is aware of the issue. And it's a tough one. It's a tough one. We have a – the same demand for services in government, whether it's transportation, whether it's higher education, whether it's social services, yet we have a declining revenue because income tax is down, sales taxes are down because of the downturn in the economy. It's not unique to Maryland. This is a national trend.
Some people would argue, Lieutenant Governor, that one of the things we have should be doing in Maryland that most states are afraid to do that Maryland doesn't seem to be able to do is to raise a gasoline tax or to raise some taxes on carbon fuels to make that a less attractive way to travel and to maybe force people into smaller cars and as they do in Europe.
Sure. I know there have been efforts in Maryland to increase the gas tax, to index the gas tax. In these difficult times where many families are having difficulty making ends meet, raising taxes is just an added burden on Maryland families. I think the good news in the area of taxes is Marylanders this April, I mean, we're in April,
yes, we are.
Either see a slight increase in their refund or if they're paying taxes to the state, the amount that they'll pay will be a little bit less because we increase the personal exemption this year to provide a little bit of relief to Marylanders. But we certainly did not introduce a gas tax this year because we think that right now Marylanders are having difficulty making ends meet as it is. But that doesn't leave us without this this challenge of having to maintain that transportation infrastructure. The good news is while it went down $2 billion, the federal government through the federal stimulus provided us about $670 million for transportation projects. Most of that went into system preservation, resurfacing roads, repairing bridges. We've done a little bit in terms of mass transit, bought some new new buses in most counties in the city of Baltimore, new MARC trains. So thanks to President Obama, what he was able to accomplish with the Congress in his first 27 days, we've got some federal stimulus dollars to provide some relief in the area of transportation infrastructure.
Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown's here. 410-319-8888 is the number. Our first caller, Russ, took us into transportation. We were talking about domestic violence. Some of you who called in about that have left, so join us here again. What do you think should happen? How does the government respond to domestic violence? What should happen to men who perpetrate that violence against women? What do we do to serve the women who are threatened with violence in our communities? And many of you experience that. Some of you may have been abusers yourself and reformed yourself. Join us here at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I mean, I guess part of that question, too, is what do you do? I mean, what should happen? What's the process that has to happen with the kind of domestic violence and violence against women we're talking about in this culture? You just came from, on your way over here, you were at House of Ruth. And it's left to like nonprofits who kind of struggle to raise money to make ends meet to keep doors open for women who experience that violence and places to find for women to go with children, which is not easy to do. The stigma attached to that kind of abuse, and women who are in those situations are often kind of almost seduced into staying there themselves and have a hard time breaking their own cycle of being part of that violence. I mean, this is it's a huge issue that we don't pay a lot of attention to.
Yeah, a lot of these nonprofit organizations like the House of Ruth, who do receive some support from the state. I think most of them would say that they don't want to be state agencies because they enjoy a degree of freedom and flexibility in the services they provide, how they can provide them, and the issues they can speak to. They also, though, rely a lot on support from the community, philanthropic and other charitable support. So I would encourage your listeners to consider supporting them in that way. And their approach is really holistic. I mean, they receive women and their children. All of them undergo a physical examination. They have counseling services available, employment services available. There is, in the case where necessary, behavioral mental health counseling and treatment available. So often the victim of domestic violence comes to these centers with a lot more going on in their lives than fleeing an abuser. But also are, because of that trauma and other things going on, are in need of a lot of other services.
So you're also in your portfolio is BRAC, that has been kind of affected by the downturn in the economy and by the funds that are changing and these grand plans for BRAC. Part of that has to do with developing transportation systems that were either rail or hybrid buses to get people back and forth to work. But all that's changing. I mean, we have this situation coming in. So how's it changed since the economic downturn?
Well, interestingly enough, Mark, when 2 years ago, when the governor and I came into office, the big concern about BRAC, which, I say tongue in cheek, is growth and development, a four-letter word for growth and development. Because that's what BRAC is. We're expanding communities around our military installations at Aberdeen and Fort Meade, a lot of households coming to Maryland, and also creating a lot of jobs. The big concern was, well, how are we going to accommodate all of this growth and development, and what are we doing to ensure that our roads are not overly congested, that our schools are not overcrowded, and issues like that. And those issues still exist, while I think we're doing a good job at managing that. Right now, the focus has turned to jobs, jobs, jobs. And there's a lot of excitement in Maryland that BRAC is coming. It's going to create 45,000 to 60,000 jobs. 15 of those are direct jobs that are already beginning to arrive here in Maryland. So that's what a lot of our focus is on now, these jobs, jobs, jobs. And what are we doing to make sure that we have the trained and educated workforce here in Maryland to fill those jobs? Initially, about 25% to 30% of those jobs coming from Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, and northern – the ones from Fort Monmouth, New Jersey are going to Aberdeen Proving Ground. And
right.
The jobs from Northern Virginia are going to Fort Meade. About 25 to 30% of those were coming with the incumbent worker. Well, for a variety of reasons, one of which is probably the downturn in the economy, now about 50% of those jobs will come with the worker. But there's still going to be plenty of jobs available to Marylanders, so we have to ensure that we're educating and training our workforce to fill those jobs. But that's not a difficult task in Maryland because we have one of the most educated and technically skilled workforces in the country. But BRAC now is about jobs. It's still about ensuring that we've got adequate infrastructure. And I think that under the governor's leadership, we've made a lot of progress in that area.
So before we run out of time here, I'm curious just politically where you see the future of Anthony Brown going. Right now, you're lieutenant governor. You may run again if Martin runs again, or you might. Who knows what's going to happen?
Well, no, let me be clear. The governor and I are running.
You're running again. There's no question about it.
In 2010, I will be the lieutenant governor candidate, and the governor is running for reelection. We know that we still have a lot of work to do. We've made progress in Maryland to make college more affordable. We've historic investments in K through 12 education, which is one reason why Maryland schools went from number five in 2007 and now are number one in the country. So we've made a lot of progress.
But there's some dispute on that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, Education Week, which is probably like the U.S. News and World Report for ranking colleges, Education Week ranks public K through 12 systems and says that we're number one. We're not number one in every area, but in the aggregate, we are. And we're also number one in terms of the students who take AP exams and in their performance in the advanced placement exam. So even if one wanted to argue we're not number one, we're certainly one of the most outstanding school systems, public school systems in the country. And I think the more exciting story of that is the progress that we've made in our classroom. So, but having said all of that, there's still a great deal of work to do in Maryland. And the governor and I know that we have two more years left in this term. We're committed to making that progress, and then we'll interview with the Maryland voters in 2010, and if things work out, we'll have another term to continue on that path of progress.
Do you think about Anthony Brown beyond that?
I think a lot about Anthony Brown beyond that. Now, where I see myself going, I'm focused really on my work as lieutenant governor, and I know that in my life, when I have committed myself to the work that's in front of me, I've had the opportunity to do some interesting and exciting things in my life. So, I'm sure that that'll be true if I continue to work hard and smart and in partnership with the governor as his lieutenant governor, as Marylander's lieutenant governor.
Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown has been our guest in the first part of our program here in the 5 o'clock hour. And it's always a pleasure to see him. We ran into each other in the hallways of Annapolis a bit ago, and we arranged his time for him to come on. We'll have him back again. And perhaps we'll have him back also in tandem with the governor when we have him on next. And Lieutenant Governor, thanks so much for being with us. A pleasure to see you as always.
Thanks, Mark. We'll see you.
Before we go to break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. For more information, go to mecu.com. And when we return, we're going to talk about President Barack Obama, his trip overseas, and really very interestingly, how the overseas press views the President of the United States of America. We'll be talking to William Kern, who is creator and editor of a groundbreaking new website called World Meets Us. World Meets Us. So go to World Meets Us, worldmeets.us right now and see the articles. He translates hundreds of articles from every country in the world that focuses their attitudes on America. We'll be talking to him for the next half an hour about how the world looks at us. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're going to talk for the next half an hour with William Kern, who is creator to an editor of the groundbreaking website World Meets Us, where you can read translated articles about America from foreign newspapers across the country. And William, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. It's a privilege to be with you and your listeners.
It's always good to talk to you, and it's good to have you on the air with us here. So let's talk a bit about your website, and let's drive people to this website as we're talking.
Okay. Well, I lead a team of people, editors and translators around the world that are dedicated to showing the American people news and information and opinion about the United States they have never had access to before. And we do that by, when necessary, and it is very often necessary, translating articles from foreign language newspapers. And so this week we've been covering Barack Obama's voyage, trip, journey through Europe, and there's a whole lot up there to discuss and look at, and I'm very excited about being able to talk to people about that.
Your website's just incredible, and I really do want to encourage people to make their way there as we are talking on the air together to kind of see what the rest of the world says about the United States of America. William Kern's got a whole host of people who translate these articles from press, from Russia, from the Middle East, from Western Europe, from all throughout Africa, from Latin America, and it's just an amazing website, and it just is eye-opening. No one else that I know around does what he does with this, and we want you to join us at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts about Barack Obama's trip and what he has said. And so tell me kind of what really has been jumping out at you on your website in terms of the stories about Barack Obama's trip through Europe.
Wow.
And now Turkey.
That's a really hard question to answer, just because there's a lot of different there's a variety of reactions. There is a pretty wide consensus that he has had a tremendously successful trip. Now, I say that after just a few minutes ago having posted an article from the Telegraph of Britain, which asks, what has he really achieved? And it says, when it comes right down to it, not that much. So that being said, I mean, the majority of content on the page, and some of it, I'd really like to just read little tidbits of some of these articles.
Sure, please do.
Give you an idea of it. Just to set the table for people who may not be familiar with the site, we have the site separated into regions. So you'll see on the right, the Americas, Asia, and Oceania. In the Middle East and Africa is in the middle, and in the left is Europe. So the action this week has been really, by and large, in Europe. So if you look at the Europe column, starting at the bottom, you'll see when Obama arrived, and then you can follow through the entire week and up until the top. Basically, we post these things as they come in, as they're translated, and we post them on the top. So again, if you go from the bottom to the top, you can pretty much follow Obama's entire week from the beginning, from a European perspective. And then, of course, in the middle column, we have coverage from Turkey today, and that's still beginning because, generally speaking, we cover opinion, and that takes a day or two for people to sort of cogitate and write. But there is a good deal of content there from the Turkish newspaper Hurriyet, and we also posted the videos of President Obama's question and answer session with Turkish students, which I found really interesting. And Turkey is such a fascinating country because it's really, it's almost absurd to say that it's a crossroads country, but it really is a crossroads country, and it is a secular Muslim state, and obviously President Obama has decided that that is a good place for him to sort of launch his overture to the Arab world. I just sent out two or three articles from Arabic to be translated, so that's just beginning to happen right now. But just to start off with, I guess I'll start off with Turkey, Marcus, if that's all right.
And let me just remind our listeners again. We're talking William Kern, who edits and created this groundbreaking website, World Meets Us. That's www.worldmeets.us.
Well, so they could type in worldmeets.us or worldmeetsus.com or worldmeetsus.org. All of those work. And just let me, I just want to say something about the translators. The people that take part in this project that have come forward in a spirit of public service to show the American people things they've never been able to see before are just the most amazing group of people. And I just wish everybody out there could know them the way that I do. But I'm really proud to be associated with the people that make this project possible. I am the managing editor, but, you know, it takes a lot of people to do this. So in any case, starting off with the Turks, today, there's a couple of very interesting articles up there. You'll see in the middle column, you've got the reaction from Israel that's come in, and reaction from Egypt that's come in, and below that, the Turkish coverage that we have so far, and there'll be more today and tomorrow and so on and so forth. There was one sort of a critical article that we posted from the Turk. Most of it's glowing. It's obvious that people in Turkey are very, very excited about President Obama's visit and everything that he said, his speech to the Turkish parliament, etc. But this one columnist named Mehmet Ali Baran wrote an article that don't believe every promise Obama makes, and apparently the Turks are miffed that they wasn't a Turk put in charge of NATO, and that it went to Fogh Rasmussen, who was the Danish prime minister when that big Muhammad cartoon episode broke out.
That's right.
I don't know if you remember that. So anyway, the Turks are not at all thrilled by this, and they seem to think that Obama either implied or promised them that it was going to be a Turk or a Turkish person was going to be in the top echelon of NATO, and they didn't get what they wanted. So that's a little bit of criticism there. That was don't believe every promise Obama makes. That's up there.
Well, that must be huge for the Turkish people in some ways, because you're talking about the uproar that took place when a Dutch newspaper printed cartoons that mocked Muhammad and Islam. And Turkey is part of NATO, and they were scheduled to become the head of NATO, but was given to the Dutch instead.
Well, is that true? I can't say that they were scheduled to be head of NATO or not, but all I can say is that it seems that they thought they were promised a high-level position in NATO, perhaps the NATO Secretary General, and they're not happy about it. And there's somewhat a philosophical discussion about this is the way international relations go, and it's nothing to get that upset about, but, you know, we can't really believe everything Obama says. And then there's an article there about how there's an article that says for Turks, Obama's visit is like a Rorschach test, which, of course, is that inkblot test that psychiatrists and because Obama sort of waded in to some very delicate areas there with the Kurds and also between Armenia and Turkey and the genocide issue. The Armenians say that the Turks committed genocide against Armenians at the end of the Ottoman Empire, and the Turks say, no, it wasn't a genocide. It was just part of this big, tumultuous historical event. Anyway, he suggested that the two sides normalize relations and that he also met with some Kurdish leaders in Turkey, which is controversial. This also relates to Iraq because of the PKK rebels in Iraq. So anyway, so he waited and said, that article's all about that. And then there's a very interesting article from about the black people in Turkey.
Yeah, I found this fascinating. I mean, the if you go to the website now, worldmeets.us, and go down and go to the newspaper Hurriyet, Hurriyet. There's a story about the Afro-Turks, right. Turks of African descent. It's a talk that it's really a very fascinating article.
It is. The person, I don't know if it's a woman or a man, I guess it's a man, they interviewed, who is the president of Turkey's Africa Cultural and Solidarity Foundation, Mustafa Olpak. He's quoted as saying in the article, the spirits of Obama's African ancestors, who are enslaved and excluded from the white man's world, are with him. The son of the despised and enslaved Africans became the black master of the White House that his ancestors had built with great difficulty. And then he admonishes Obama, let him be a friend of the oppressed and alienated societies, let him be on the side of rightness and justice, as his ancestors expect of him. Which is interesting, because, you know, most of the African religions and tribes believe in ancestors. It's basically ancestor worship. And so that's part of what the quote was referring to. So, and then there's also stuff from Egypt about how the Turks are glad Barack Obama came, but they're not that crazy about being designated a Muslim country because they want to join Europe, and they're a little skittish about being classified as Muslims in terms of geopolitics. So the fact that President Obama is sort of using them as a stepping-off point for making contact with the Muslim world is a little uncomfortable for them, according to that article. Very interesting. That's from the Middle East Times, a Turkey East-West matchmaker. What do you say we start off with the European content, Mark?
Sure. And I just as we do that, I just think that the article, I think that our listeners would find that the article you're talking about very fascinating, that the guy who wrote this article says his family were enslaved in 1895 from Zanzibar and brought to Turkey. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really interesting world. And one of the folks joins here, 410-319-8888, as we explore in this half hour how the world looks at the United States of America from the website worldmeets.us, which is a website founded by William Kern that translates articles from around the world. And you can find articles from every language in every continent and almost every nation. And what's exciting about this, I think, also is that we have an idea in America that America has the only real free press. But you can see from your articles that you've translated that there's a very vibrant world press out there who has a lot to say.
Absolutely. You know, I think I've always said since we began this project, and I really believe this, that this project is about drawing on the wisdom of the rest of the world, which is not only our responsibility, but our first right. You know, because this is where we come from. So I'm getting a little, another conversation on the line there, Mark.
We're hearing some feedback on the air. Maybe, I don't know if it's the phone.
Okay, I'll just keep going.
Go ahead.
Fine. So in any case, let's start off with the French. I've done this by country, you know, and we can interrupt me or stop me or whatever.
No, go ahead.
I think is best. So the feature story today, if you look on top of the page, Obama has conquered Europe. This article compares him to Pope John Paul II, if you can believe it. And it I just want to read a few sentences. From
sure, please.
I find it very striking. So he's quote. So this quote, it starts quoting Obama's meeting with French and German students in Strasbourg, which, by the way, it's packaged in the article if you want to watch the entire thing. Or it's in all of these speeches Obama's given and meetings he's given are all on the website. They're all so people can look at them, and I've also packaged the articles with them. So in any case, so quoting Obama's meeting with French and German students, it says, if you only think about, this is quoting Obama, if you only think about yourself, how much money can I make, what can I buy, how nice is my house, what kind of fancy car do I have, over the long term, I think you get bored. So that's what Obama said. And then it goes on to say, what leader, since the death of Pope John Paul II, can excite a room full of young people by extolling the virtues of family and calling a generation to give of themselves and exhibit generosity? And so here's the last paragraph, which I find very striking. It says, in 5 days, more than just a new leader, it is the face of a new America that has been offered to Europe. Self-assured and charismatic, but without a hint of arrogance, Barack Obama has achieved a perfect score in winning the confidence and respect of European leaders and public opinion. A real challenge after 8 years of Bush. This is what history will record. This is from the Le Journal du Dimanche au Quotidien newspaper. Then there was an article from Le Figaro. This is an editorial by Pierre Rosolin, and we've been translating him for like...
Le Figaro is an Italian newspaper.
No. This is also French. We're all
also French.
Now. We're going to do France, then we'll do Germany, and we'll just go through it that way. So this article, Pierre Rosolin, he's their usual editorial writer at Le Figaro, which is the most sort of, I won't say right-wing, but, you know, the most center-right French newspaper that's really popular. And he uses an exclamation point, which is really extraordinary. I think we've translated 25, 30 articles from him. I'm just guessing, you know. But we've translated a lot of articles that he's written, and I never have seen him use an exclamation point. Anyway, he writes, quote, about President Obama, I'm sorry, the headline is President Obama, quote, what a change for the alliance, exclamation point. He says he has no equal in seducing his audience with elegance and humility, recognizing America's past mistakes to get across his real message. Quote, Europe should not simply expect the United States to shoulder the burden alone, unquote. The new administration's policy is still under construction in Afghanistan as well as toward Russia, Iran, or the Middle East. But already, what a change in style and manner of doing things, exclamation point. Within days, Obama will have laid the foundations of a new transatlantic alliance. So it's really effusive.
In praise. It seems that the majority of the press I've been reading from Europe is very pro-Obama.
Absolutely. I would say that the British have the most skeptics amongst all the Europeans, which I think is common. The Germans as well. I mean, the Germans are also a little bit hard to convince, a little bit skeptical, and same for the Dutch, I would say. It seems like the French, the Spanish, the Portuguese, very excited, very effusive. But like I said, the Germans are, and the Poles and the Eastern Europeans as well, a little more cautious, a little more standoffish, a little more let's wait and see. And, of course, the Russians as well, you know, not wanting to give in to too much enthusiasm. But we do have some coverage from the Russians up there, which we'll get to in a few minutes. And
let me open the phones here a bit. We're talking with William Kern, who is the creator and editor of the groundbreaking website worldmeets.us, World Meets Us. You can go to the website, see what is going on there. There are hundreds of newspapers from around the world where articles are translated from Portuguese, from Russian, from Chinese, from French, from languages throughout the world, from newspapers from every continent. 410-319-8888. We're looking at how the world looks at Barack Obama. And let's go to Darren in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Hi, Darren.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, I haven't been one of those that have drank the Obama Kool-Aid or the Obama Aid, but I just didn't pick up all that your guest is talking about from what I've read in the press. Of course, he was protested in Turkey vehemently. They burned and tore up effigies of Barack Obama. They say Yankee go home, and of course they weren't talking about the Yankees that were playing here in Camden Yards yesterday. Then when he went to NATO on the birthday of Dr. King, while the world was celebrating and commemorating one of the most peaceful men to ever live, he went to NATO on Saturday on the April the 4th and asked for 70,000 troops, not for peace, but for war in Afghanistan, and they turned him down and said, we'll give you 5,000. So what does your guest think about that?
And how did the press you translated respond to that?
Well, I mean, we have the video of those protests he was talking about that you were referring to, and it seems, I'm not really sure what it is they're angry about. We have an Al Jazeera report up there in the middle column if you go down just a little bit, and it's also packaged in that article from Turkey. It seems as though they're worried that it's going to make things more difficult for Turkey because I'm not really sure. I mean, maybe he can tell me what it is that they're angry about it, but it just seems that they're worried about change. That's really what they were protesting about. I didn't see any effigies of Obama. Maybe it's true. Maybe he's read that they were burning effigies of Obama, but I think that's a pretty small minority of people. As far as the NATO summit, I don't think Obama set the date for that. And I don't think anyone wants, I don't think anybody wants the effort in Afghanistan to collapse. So I don't know how else to respond to that. But, you know, we just basically we're just trying to show people what the rest of the world is saying, good, bad, or indifferent. And, you know, my opinions don't really matter all that much, to be honest. We're just trying to show people what there is.
Well,
did the
press in Turkey cover the demonstrations against Barack Obama that took place in Ankara?
We do not have a Turkish translator, so I have to rely on their English language coverage. And there was only just basically a news item, nothing that we didn't have in a lot of other places. It was just that there was this protest, and they're worried about change. They're worried about what might happen because Obama's doing so many different things and doing so many new things. So I didn't see anything that I thought was worth posting from the Turkish press. But I encourage people to certainly go look. I mean, if you go down on the bottom of the page in worldmeets.us, you'll see links to the Turkish newspapers that have provided content about the United States. And I say that because we only link to websites that cover foreign affairs, obviously, from other countries, because that's what the purpose of our project is. And if there's like 30, for example, there's like 30,000-40,000 newspapers online right now. Really, only a small percentage of them discuss foreign affairs. It's just like in the United States, most newspapers are community oriented and they're concerned about what's going on locally. So we're concerned with newspapers that might cover.
I mean, there were stories like as you covered in on your website, the Financial Times of London.
Mm-hmm.
You have a story. Where rioters forced Michelle Obama and Carla Bruni to not go to the Strasbourg castle for a meeting because the rioters blocked the way.
Absolutely. That's really G20 protesters. I mean, there are always protests at the G20. It wasn't really targeted at the Obamas or really even the United States necessarily. It was really just about the G20, globalization, unfair trade regime, that kind of a thing. And there are people who are really kind of, according to what we have covered in last week, these are mostly professional protesters. They're called black blockers, which is a term I had never seen before, but it's I think in the feature story, there's some mention of that, of them, and a link to what they are. But yes, there's always there were protests at the G20 this year, just as there always are, and some of them were quite violent.
So and we're going to try to get the caller in here before we have to get to the top of the hour. So let's as soon as we get her in, we're going to get her to ask you a question.
Sure.
We have her here. Let's go to Beverly in Northeast, and your question for William Kern. Hi, Beverly.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Mark?
This is he. Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. How are you doing today?
I'm well.
That's good. I just wanted to call and give a comment on our President of the United States, Obama. I think that he is doing a terrific job, and I say this because he is willing to listen, he's willing to learn, and he's willing to allow other people to express themselves. And I love the idea of him using young folks to come out and voice their opinion and do things. This is what we need. We cannot govern the world as we did 20 or 30 years ago. You have to have some newness in it to accommodate the coming of the future. So it's good to use to communicate with young folks. It's good to go out to learn, to listen to other people, and not try to say that because we are United States that we're supposed to dictate to others. And I think he's doing a good job. And he's not going to be perfect, and we are not perfect. So I think he just keep on going out and presenting himself the way that he does and representing the United States. I think the country is going to turn around. I think there's going to be some peace. I enjoy listening to your show.
Thank you so much, Beverly. Before we run out of time, William, I want you to, there was an article in the Russian press that was fascinating about that both Obama and Medvedev, the president of Russia, do not get it. As he wrote, the hegemony of the U.S. is over, and the power of the old Soviet Union, Russia, is over, and neither president discussed it or understood it.
Right.
And I found that interesting to be in the Russian press.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That newspaper, Gazeta, is very eye-opening because, you know, we like to think that there's no free press in Russia, but they regularly criticize the administration over there, and they seem pretty free to say what they like. I don't know, you know, how many people read Gazeta, but it's a very interesting newspaper. Well, they went on to say, adding to what you just said, that neither side realizes the changed world that they're in. It says, but the revelation will inevitably come, and with it, perhaps, another lens through which Russia and American will look at one another. In other words, when they both realize what's happened, they might be able to make deals on more things than they seem to be able to do now. But that article is very positive. You know, Mark, I wish we had like 2 hours.
One day we'll do a longer show, and I look forward to having you and some of your translators on to really go into some of these articles.
I would really like to do that. You know, we have such some of the most amazing people. There's another thing that is very interesting about the last week is this little-known or little-heard-of organization that looks like it's going to oversee the market. Hold on, where the hell it's called the Financial Stability Forum. And this article from Le Monde, A Truly New World Order Emerges in London, Global Currency Draws Nearer. This was really like an eye-opener to me because it seems like after the G20 was over, they had agreed that this little-known organization was going to, they use the word harmonize rules and make sure everybody knows what's going on. But this article points out that this little organization that nobody ever heard of before is really the kind of the germ of a supranational institution that eventually will have to oversee the markets, which is really what the Central Europeans are very keen on arranging. And the United States has resisted. The Chinese are not crazy about the idea either. There's an article up there about how Obama brokered a peace between Sarkozy and Hu Jintao at a hotel room, and that was what they were arguing about, partly what they were arguing about. So anyway, Mark, I want to thank you for having us on.
It's a pleasure always to have you on, William Kern, and we will come back to this and really look forward to having roundtables with you and some of our international experts and some of your translators to talk about what we're finding in the press around the world. And encourage you all to go to worldmeets.us and read the press of the world. And William Kern, thank you so much for the work you do, and thank you for joining us here today.
It's really a privilege, Mark. Have a great night.
Take care.
Bye.
And folks, we're going to take a very brief break and come back for our second hour in just a little bit here. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. And for more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-4646. 7555. When we come back for our second hour, we are going to tackle the question of food production in our country and around the world. Is sustainable agriculture possible? Right now, that's not how we buy our food for the most part. Or is it a myth? We'll talk about that and more. It's our food and the future health of our lives on Steak Gear, and we'll come to that conversation when we return after the top of the hour. Stay with us.